This week on the Old Ski Rex Media Podcast, I'm going to start by telling you a story, and I hope you dig that, but specifically, we're going to talk to the founder of Anti-Ordinary, because this week we're talking about protecting the old skull, the old noggin, the old brain pan. We're talking helmets and brand new helmet technology this week on the Ski Rex Media Podcast. How you doing, everybody? This is, of course, Tim from Ski Rex Media, back at you after a few weeks of solo episodes, after a week of a missed episode, because I got busy to the point where I was not able to put out an episode, which is awful on my part. I know it's not a good thing when I miss a week, and I've missed two now this season. I should at least do a solo, but I have a story from that week, so it should be fine. We're fine. We're good. We're getting back into the swing of things right here at the end of the season, right? Right. Before we get into the episode, and this is going to be a little bit of a long one because of the interview and the story I'm telling you, but before we get into all of that, let's talk about Whaleback Mountain. Now, Whaleback is done for 2023-2024. Their season is done. The outside ski season, that is. And it came down to the cardboard box race, which was awesome. Check out my social media for a few photos from that. It was really a lot of fun. Really cool. Short, but sweet, and a lot of fun, and no one got hurt, and everybody laughed even during the crash. But Whaleback, obviously, with doing a cardboard box race, is more than just skiing, snowboarding, and snow sports. During the season, we have a lot of fun skiing at Whaleback because they have everything you want in a small package. They have the ungroomed, the groomed, the hard stuff, the easy stuff, the trees, the uphill, the downhill, whatever you want, the learning area, rentals, everything. But their season, when it ends, starts the next season. That's right. Throughout the off season, or what we consider the off season for the outside, you can go to Whaleback and hang out. You could go to Whaleback and watch one of several concerts. There's all kinds of events coming. Maybe your event's coming. They can host your event too. Whaleback does not stop. Whaleback does not stop when the snow stops. They just move on to other things because that's what we all do to keep busy for the off season. If we're not traveling or doing something else, we're going to be here at home. And for me, that's Whaleback Mountain, right off the interstate. I-89, exit 16, you could get there. Do you need them to host your event? Give them a call. They could probably do it for you. Do you want to check out one of their events? Go to whaleback.com, check out their event calendar, and see what's the what. Or follow them on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and X. You can keep up with them. Whaleback, the show doesn't stop at Whaleback. Who knows? Adam Ezra might come back for his three-peat. The Adam Ezra Group, a lot of fun, great band. But that's what you could see at Whaleback. Music, you could drink your beers, you could have your food, you could have your wedding. It's all up to you at Whaleback. Whaleback Mountain, ski it to believe it, and visit during the summer. Also, I've been talking all season about my Embrace Snow Sports leggings. You could go to Embrace.com right now and check them out if you want to see them for yourself, or you can wait for my full review, which is coming soon. Embrace Snow Sports leggings are awesome. Compression leggings, built-in compression and support for the entire lower into the upper body. What do I mean by that? Start at the knees. The knees have built-in, or what feels like built-in, knee support. Like you're wearing knee braces. It goes up through the hip, and it goes up over your mids, over your hips, into your back. It is wonderful. Designed in part by Shemi Alcott, four-time Olympic skier, Olympic ski team for England. She helped design it, and she knows what she's talking about. And I've been riding mine all season, and they are awesome. I feel much better wearing them than I do not wearing them, to the point where I don't like to take them off at the end of the ski day. But if I do, I can always move into my Embrace Dynamic Plus leggings. Very similar, but built for other sports. Hiking, biking, running. These things that we're going to be doing as we get into the off-snow season for us who have an off-snow season, right? Check out embrace.com, I-M-B-R-A-C-E, link in the description, of course, and you can pick up a pair of the snow sports leggings. Get yourself ready for next season. You can pick up a pair of the Dynamic Plus and get ready for this season of summer and spring and fall to train for the next ski season and snowboard season. They are wonderful. Plus, I've done a couple episodes about them on the podcast. Go back and check them out. One with founder Jeff Hansen and one with designer Olympic skier Shemi Alcott. It was a lot of fun with both of them. They could tell you all about it. It's wonderful. It's great. I love them. I highly endorse them. If you want to go pick up a pair of your own and you want to get a little bit off, a little bit of money off, use the code SKIREX10 to get 10% off. SKIREX10 will get you 10% off of your snow sports leggings or your Dynamic Plus leggings. Embrace at embrace.com. Check it out, please. Now, if you follow SKIREX Media on social media, you already know part of the story. Speaking of which, please do, if you do not follow SKIREX Media on social media, please do, is what I'm getting at. On Instagram, on Facebook, on X, even on LinkedIn, you can follow SKIREX Media. You can also go to SKIREXmedia.com to find all those links. You can find links to my Patreon. You can find links to the merch shop as well. If you wish to support SKIREX Media and everything it has to offer, you can also leave me a voicemail. You can go to SKIREXmedia.com and use the link on the page, or you can go to SpeakPipe.com/SKIREXmedia and you can leave me a question, a comment, a query, a concern, a criticism. Just don't be a jerk and I will address it. I'll even bring it up on the podcast, which I have done before. It has worked out before and I love fan interaction. So if we could do that some more, I would love it and I thank you ahead of time. You can also send an email. contact@SKIREXmedia.com with all that same stuff, including like shout outs and fun stuff. If you want to shout out your snowboard and your skiing buddy, you could do that. If you want to shout out your anniversary or your wedding, you could do that. A happy birthday, you could do that. If you want to tell someone they stink and you're mad at them, we could do that too. Let's just do it tastefully, right? Right, we can do that. So follow SKIREX Media, get in contact with SKIREX Media, check out everything SKIREX Media has to offer. In the merch shop, we're going to add a few more pieces of merch, or you can check out Patreon. Tiers start at $1. That gets you ad-free podcast. That gets you early podcast. So check that out too, please. Now, as I was saying, if you were on the social media, you already know part of the story. I wanted to tell you about my trip real quick to Attitash and Wildcat. So for those who don't know, I've been riding on the Epic Pass. I had to deal with them. Ride the New Hampshire Epic Mountains, talk about it, do some social media content creation about it, and you can come ride with us. And I was like, awesome, I'll do that. Especially since I had not been to 3 out of 4 of the New Hampshire mountains. I had only been to Mount Sunapee, and now I have been to Crotchet, which I absolutely love that place. I have now been to Attitash, which I've been trying to get to since the late 90s. How's that figure? And I got to Whale Cat. Okay. Pardon my throat clearing, but this was something in the videos that I posted on social media, and now I'm doing it now. I cannot say Wildcat consistently. It is Wildcat Mountain. It is 2 hours from Whaleback Mountain. Yet I keep saying Whalecat. I keep saying Whalecat. I don't know why. It's friggin' dumb. I can't stop myself. I did it at least, I think you hear it twice in the videos on social media. And you could go back and get those. Well, actually, those might have been story videos. So you might have to wait until I compile them all, edit them all, and put them together as single videos. But I say Whalecat at least twice that I left in, and maybe more than that that I took out. I don't know why. Obviously, I have Whaleback on the brain, and I love Whaleback, and I partner with them as well. Just like the Epic Pass, I partner with Whaleback. It's a lot of fun. I should still be able to say Whaleback, and I should still be able to say Wildcat consistently separated. Let's see if we can get through the rest of this story without doing it, or we could turn it into a drinking game. Every time I say Whalecat, take a shot, or whatever, however you want to play it. It's fine. So anyway, couple weeks ago, I got, and this is why I wasn't able to, this is one of the reasons I wasn't able to get my a podcast episode ready for last week. I had to go for an overnight. I did Attitash on a Thursday, stayed overnight at the Eagle Mountain House, really cool place in Jackson, awesome, check that out, and then went to Wildcat the next day. Now, here's the difference a day makes. When I went to Attitash, it was a Thursday, so it was empty anyway. It was a lot of fun. I had pretty much the whole place to myself, and I didn't even go to Bear Peak that time. I just stayed on the Attitash side so I could ride all the Attitash lifts. I'm pretty sure I've ridden all the chair lifts there, and I also rode the magic carpet. Love me a magic carpet. So I got all those lifts. A lot of fun. Now, it was cloudy. Not cold, really. Just cloudy. It was a spring day. It was a cloudy spring day. I switched to my clear lens in my goggles because that just worked out the best. That's how cloudy it was. So that's fine. I had a good day. Skied a whole bunch. Well, no, I didn't. I can't say a whole bunch that day. It was a few hours though because I got there super late. Got a late start. But went ahead, skied there. Went to the Eagle Mountain House. Checked in. Slept. Off to Wildcat. Haha, I may have stuttered, but I said Wildcat even in the stutter. So I went to Wildcat. Now that Friday, it was sun and blue skies for days. The true bluebird day, dude. It was something else. But you get to Wildcat and it was cold. It was 22 degrees when I got there at the summit. And I got there at like 9:15. So I just missed first chair, but I was there right as they opened. And the place was empty because it was right as they opened. Even on a Saturday, your ski area is far less packed when they open. Not everybody likes to get up first thing and go to the first chair. Other people do. You know, it's to each their own. Whatever you want to do, both are fine. I just happened to be able to get up early. And since I was right there around the corner in Jackson, got there right after the place opened. It was awesome. It was cold, but the sun and the blue sky went on for days. The skiing was fun. They had fair amount open. Nothing in the diamond or double diamond range, if that was what you were looking for that day. But all of their cruisers, blues, greens, what have you, were open. Some were groomed, and all were still solid. Now, the day before, it was slush at, you know, soften it up to slush at Attitash. And I was tired from that. We know sometimes pushing that stuff around can wear you out, depending on the shape you're in and what you do and how you, you know, how you work out and whatnot. And it wore me out. Everything at Everything at Wildcat was absolutely solid. And I did find some real ice too during the day that threw me a little bit, but it was still solid. So it was just cruising from top to bottom. It was wonderful. Not to mention the fact that with the blue sky, now Wildcat faces west, looks right into, across the street, Mount Washington. So here you have that Mount Washington as the pinnacle, as the center of the view. And just that mountain range covered in snow, mind you, because it's up there and they get the crazy weather up there. It was one of the most majestic, beautiful ski views. And I love a good ski view. I love a bad ski view. This one is not bad. You can't take your eyes off it. Not just because you're facing west, but because, man, it looks that good. It is beautiful. And I rode just looking at that for the day, man, and it was amazing. Wildcat is now also way up on my top ski hill lists, top ski area, ski resort list. I loved every second of it. It was beautiful. Just to see the sights was amazing. The snow was, granted it was solid, not everybody likes that, but man, that day it was effortless. You just had to dig your edge in and you went, and that you just did it. And it was awesome. And even though, like many places, following that, since then, they've gotten more snow. which is interesting. March is like our month now, it seems. It's not as good as it was last March, but this March is turning out okay, I guess, for some places, not everybody. Some places are getting lucky, others aren't. But Wildcat, man, sickness, I couldn't believe it. I loved it. For a first time there to say that it's probably in my top, I'd say top 10, if not top 5, it's awesome. I loved it. I could not believe it. The lodge is really nice, too, just so it's said. But what a beautiful day to go. That whole week was clouds and rain, so I didn't even think to throw sunblock in my pocket. I had to stop in the retail shop and buy sunblock. It was that necessary. I didn't want my face to burn. It doesn't feel good, and it's not good for you. Yes, skiing and snowboarding and other snow sports are sunblock sports, just like the beach. Bring your sunblock. Or keep covered up, one or the other. You're going to thank yourself. It was awesome. Wildcat was amazing. I loved it. I would have skied it longer, but I tried to stop in on somebody we all know up there. Missed him, but still. And then I also had to get back to the Upper Valley that day. So I couldn't stay until close, but I got most of the day, and it was a lot of fun, and I loved it. And, man, I hope the next time I get up there for next season, it's as sunny with that view. And that view is ridiculous, man. It's just Mount Washington and all of its glory. And to the left, if you know, I think this is Tuckerman Ravine. If you're facing west, and you see the big mountain, and then you see to the left, I think that's Tuckerman Ravine. It looked the part. I've never seen it in person, up close, or from far away, from across the way at Wildcat. This is the first time I saw it. It looked right, but it looks, obviously, the pictures, you know, look a little different. I mean, I can't say it looks different. It's hard to explain. But if I'm wrong about that, someone correct me if I'm wrong. We all know I'm not the best at playing What's the Mountain. In fact, let me add that part to the story. First time I went to Attitash, I saw a mountain. You go up to the top of Attitash, you see another ski mountain off in the distance. And you're like, oh, I said, what is that? What mountain is that? The following week, I come back, I see it again. I was like, I know what that is. That's Black Mountain. No, it isn't. That night in between Attitash and Wildcat, I decided to run into Conway for food. That's where I went for my dinner. And as I'm driving into Conway and I see Cranmore there, I'm like, dummy, that's Cranmore that you see from the top of Attitash. A few people corrected me. Shout out to Scooter, number one. He got me first. I was like, yeah, I realized it when I drove into Conway that night. He said something the next day. And then a couple other people were like, yeah, dude, that's Cranmore. And I was like, yeah, it is. I realized it. But obviously not from the top of the mountain. I realized it from the car while driving into Conway to go to the Market Basket to pick up Market Basket fried chicken. Delicious. Shout out to Market Basket. Anyway, that's my story. It went a little longer than I intended. But hey, now I'm going to give you an interview. Now I'm going to give you a new friend of Ski Rex Media, a new guest. This is Rob Joseph. He founded Anti-Ordinary down there in Australia. He wanted to figure out how to do helmets and not only make them super safe with new technologies, but he's made them look good too. They look a lot different, and you're going to want to maybe play along on the website, antiordinary.co, link in the description. Again, don't check it if you're driving. If you're listening to the car, you're obviously going to have to wait, but check it out. It's awesome. I want one of these helmets, and I think you might want one too at the end. He might sell you on one. He didn't have to sell me. I saw them. I liked them. I talked to him with my coworkers and friends at Whaleback. Shout out to Allie over there at Whaleback as one of the lift operators. I told her about it. In fact, I shout out to her later in the interview. So let's get into the interview now. You can dig on that, and I will be back at the end to close out the program. Enjoy. Rob Joseph from Anti-Ordinary and Australia. Now, if you're like me, you put your helmet on, you walk downstairs to the bathroom at your local ski resort or ski area, whatever, and you look in the mirror. You look at your helmet and you're like, damn, is my head really that big? For me, it is. I have been called a melon head many times, but that's whatever. Vanity's only part of the helmet. I look a little silly, but I'm safe and I don't care. But here's a man who has, he's coming at it from every direction, it feels like to me. He's got your vanity covered if you're vain. I'm really not. I don't care. He's got your technology covered. Like, gosh, I was reading some of this stuff. I don't understand every word. And I'm pretty sure you could test this by cracking your friend upside the head with a 2x4 and having a blast doing that. Don't do it. Please don't do it. In any case, this man will bring it all back together. Enough of my bad jokes. Rob Joseph, sir, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Matt. How are you?
Great. Awesome. Now, if you hear the accent, Rob is from Australia, just like Maria was. So we're going all the way across the planet, except he's not across the planet. He's just across the country in Utah. Dude, how is your vacation?
It's been going well. I mean, it's not much of a vacation. I'm here for work, of course, but it's always a great time being in the States and always a great time being close to the snow. Of course, I'm from the hot part of Australia, so we don't get too much of the good stuff where I'm from.
Totally. Hey man, but if you can mix a little play in with your work, I'd call it a vacation. I don't know. What do I know though? I don't know nothing. I don't go anywhere. What do I know? All right. So Rob is here. Now he is the founder. Now, as he said, he's out working. I assume you're trying to sell helmets while you're out there.
Somewhat. We're just about finished selling helmets now that it's March. But it's a cool bit of business development stuff, getting some people in the helmets, getting some reviews out and doing some deals as well.
Excellent. So he's working. Now, we keep bringing up helmets. What are we talking about? Rob is the founder of Anti-Ordinary. Now, you know what? We'll go to him. We'll let him explain how he became the founder and what it is, who he is and what he does. That's where we start. So let's start there, dude. Who are you and what is this that you've created?
Yeah, I guess it's all interlinked. So as you said, my name's Rob. I'm from the hot part of Australia. Like the Steve Irwin part. So I grew up action sports kid, anything that was dangerous, anything that required a helmet I was into. So motorbikes initially, but you know, mountain bikes, BMX, wakeboarding later on as I was a teenager. And just love it. Love action sports. Love traditional sports too, but action sports is where I'm at. It's all the dangerous stuff that mum sure. gets worried about. Pretty much grew up my entire life in a helmet, even to the point where I was competing in wakeboarding and I had a helmet sort of that was I used in competition, so I rode pretty much every single day in it until I was about 17 or so. Went to the snow for the first time over in New Zealand. Went on a couple of trips and kept this helmet with me. And back home, I'd never had a problem with helmets. I never really thought twice about it. I was a medical engineering student at the time, so I knew it was dumb not to wear one. But I got to the snow and just got so frustrated with this helmet that I liked back home and took it off. Inevitably had a crash, and New Zealand can be a little bit hard packed at times if you know the snow there, and realized it was dumb not to wear a helmet, but also realized a lot of people don't want to wear one. And so being the medical engineer at the time, I sort of went on a bit of a journey to try and find the best one just to solve the problem so I could ski or snowboard in it. And then I found nothing had really happened in a long time. I was quite disappointed to see that none of the tech really enamored me at all. I wasn't really interested in it and didn't make big leaps ahead like I'd hoped there was. There was no winner.
Sure.
So we jumped aboard and thought, well, let's try and make our own. Let's try and, you know, be the change we want to see in the world and build the best helmet in the world rather than, you know, rather than just buy one. And that's sort of the way it went. And the whole concept is around, we realized that people didn't want to wear helmets. People who didn't wear helmets wore beanies. And even a lot of people who wore helmets wore beanies anyway. So sure. we thought, well, instead of trying to make a helmet more comfortable, why don't we make a beanie that's safe? And that was the concept is, you know, if brain protection wasn't a thing, you'd wear a beanie. If you didn't have to protect your brain, it's warm, it's comfortable, it looks good, happy days. Sure. But because we also need to protect our brains too, and that's probably the most important part, we thought, well, why don't we just combine the both? And that was sort of 7 years ago now. So it's been a long R&D journey, but we're here now.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that you bring up that the technology hasn't come up. Now, I remember back in my day in the 90s, and a lot of us can, you know, who were around then, we didn't wear helmets, but nobody did. Mountain biking, sure, that was a thing. Some sports were, but snow sports in particular, none of us wore them. Nobody did. That was the odd person out, the one who wore the helmet. And now you've seen that completely go 180. It is a rarity to see someone out on a mountain without a helmet of all ages. All ages, from new kids to us old school kids to the older guys and gals out there. Everybody wears a helmet now, and you're right. It's I there are times when I wear mine, but I look at it, I'm like, is this really gonna do the job? Not that I'm insulting it. It is a brand name, decent helmet that I spent money on, but still, is it gonna get the job done like you asked and like you said? And medical engineering background. That's fantastic too. So talk about it. It almost seems like you're destined to do this. that being an action sports fan who does them, not just a fan, but has the know-how to make this. Like, it's almost destiny, I would say.
I mean, to some degree. I mean, I've also had a bunch of brain injuries at the same time. I had a bunch of concussions, and you know, my parents are business owners as well, and my dad is a very, very good engineer. So I've sort of spent my entire life growing up and tinkering and fixing stuff with him. So it's sort of all roads have led to Rome on this one.
Absolutely, man. Now, and another thing that feels kismet to me is that not only do most of us wear helmets on many, many sports nowadays, but that we didn't used to, it's become, head injuries have become forefront in sports. We know it here in the U.S. with American football that, you know, those, there's a lot of technology going into those, because we now know that head injuries will not only be bad when they happen, they will be bad later on, or maybe even worse. We know that in pro wrestling, that's a worldwide phenomenon. We know that in combat sports, MMA, boxing, rugby, other versions of football, rugby, these other similar sports. Sumo wrestling even is now starting to look at head injuries. So it is a big deal. Now, did you ever think, as a medical engineering student with that background, that you'd be into helmets, or did you think you were going to be building other things? Or is that not what the goal is at all?
No, well, helmets sort of came in late, I suppose. I was pretty much finished my degree, and it genuinely came from my own experience. It was just that I hated this helmet. Let's build one. And it wasn't like, let's be entrepreneurial, let's build a company, let's whatever. So let's just build something that we like. Yeah. When I started university, my ultimate goal was to make prosthetics a sport. The sport is my overarching love, sure, regardless of action or not. And I remember as a kid watching, I don't know if you know of a guy called Stacey Kohut. He's a local out at Whistler, and he rides like a four cross bike.
Okay.
So, and sure, he's unreal. So he's in a wheelchair, but he rides downhill on, yeah, you know, like Whistler Mountain Bike Park four cross, and totally, it's that kind of thing, is building prosthetics and things to get people back into the sport they love. That's mm-hmm. what I started out wanting to do. And funnily enough, years later, actually on a business trip for this job, I actually met and rode mountain bikes with Stacey Kohut, just luckily, awesome, which is an unreal 360 thing to have happen. But that was the original plan. But pretty much anything that blends that sport and engineering thing always took my fancy. And it was just that the helmets annoyed me enough that we had to go and do something about it.
And that's the way it goes. There's two ways to get into business in this world, kids. See the problem and come up with a way to fix it, or hate the problem and come up with a way to fix it, whether you see it or actually not, whether it's going to affect you or not, whatever. It was another bad joke on my part. Pardon me, everybody. So adaptive sports, that was going to be the way you go. We love adaptive sports here. We've talked to many folks who have done it, of all shapes, sizes, colors, and technologies, whatever it might be. That's amazing. So now you know your helmet stinks. You got to build a better one. What's the process like? Now, again, there's words here I don't even understand. There's approvals and certifications. Where do you start to get to this?
It's an interesting one. And I guess there's two parallels, because we sort of came up in the startup scene. So we do business quite differently to what a lot of sort of ski industry does. And particularly being from where we are in the world, we were isolated from the ski industry, which is a good and a bad thing, depending on which way you look at it and depending on the circumstance. Sure. So from a design perspective, we just go, what do we need to do? We've got, you know, we wrote 10 things that this thing needed to happen. And the first thing we actually did was, how can we fix it? So we recognize the problem is that brain injuries are an issue in sports. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the first exercises that we do, and I still coach people to do every time they come to me with a business idea, is figure out how many other ways, write 100 different ways you can to fix mm-hmm. the problem. So you're not trying to build a product. Building mm-hmm. a product is not the important part. It is fixing a problem. Okay. And so we started with brain injuries in action sports, or in snow sports in particular. And yeah, you come up with some dumb ideas. Like one of them is you can't get hurt snowboarding or skiing if you ban skiing. If nobody skis, nobody gets a brain injury. And so it's a dumb idea, but it's a fantastic process to go through. It's like, well, sure, why don't we teach people to snowboard better? And so they don't fall and don't hurt themselves. And of sure, course, they're not reasonable, but they're ways of fixing the same thing. And then we started with this big list of how could we fix this? And in the end, there's an ultimate winner, or a combination of a few is an ultimate winner. And in the end, the ultimate winner was build the best brain protection. And that's what we did. And so we took it from a directly first principles thing. So we sort of forgot what a helmet looks like, pulled it out of our brains, and just went, if we were to design a brain protection device without knowing what a helmet would be, specifically ground up for the snow,
sure,
what would it be like? And
awesome.
That's where it's sort of like, it needs to fit, feel, look like a beanie, but it needs to be protective like a helmet. And it, we actually went a step further on the protection. It was like, we want it to be the safest helmet in the world. And so they're not easy design challenges to mix, because it's very easy to make something that fits, feels, looks good, and also pretty easy to make something that's safe.
Mm-hmm.
But combining the two was the hard part. And so it's just a constantly iterative process where you come up with an idea that only would be great, but it would break the other part. So you have to go and fix the other part to suit that. And so it just goes around and around in circles for years. But it's one of those ones where it was a really exciting design process, albeit long.
Long. How long have you been working on this?
7 years.
7 years. Wow.
7 years.
7 years. And it seems, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into design and then manufacture and stuff on something that seems, now again, I don't know anything about it. That's why we're here. We're learning, SkiRex Media learning, but it looks so simple when the finished product is just there. And we take that for granted as consumers who don't know how anything works. You know, we do it with our cars. There's people, my car is simple, and you tell them, well, go do something to it, and they can't do it because it's not simple. And it is amazing, man, what you've done here, because, you know, now that it's kind of interesting to me that you say you started from scratch. Like, what's a helmet? I don't know. I'm just going to build something from scratch. And it kind of now looks like that's exactly what you did. Not even from a fashion standpoint, which again is part of this, and we'll get to that, but the technology is more impressive to me. You look at this thing and it looks almost like something out of the future, out of the science fiction. Like, how is something like that? And again, I compared my big melon-headed helmet to something that looks like it looks like it shouldn't work. That's amazing to me. When you take the beanie off it, the cover off it, it looks like it shouldn't work. But and you're doing stuff to it. Like, there's a GIF on the main page where you're squeezing it in half, but you could take a hit on it. So, all right, enough of my amazement. How does it work? Let's do that. Since we've just said this is something that's supposed to protect your head, protect you from brain injuries, very important these days, we found out as humans. Here's, and again, go to antiordinary.co, just as I've said it, links in the description, and you can see, like, these demonstrations of something that that shouldn't work but does. So you went through the design process, you got the design. How did you get it? Like, when did it come to use these, what do they call, non-Newtonian materials, and, you know, the flexibility versus the thin versus the weight? You spent 7 years on it. How did you get to those materials specifically?
Interesting. When we first started looking at materials, once again, from first principles, we ended up at non-Newtonian materials, which they start off soft and then turn hard when you impact them. Which, like, if you know D3L or XRD, they're a similar concept.
Sure.
And the original idea was to build a whole helmet out of that. However, we took a little while into it, and we realized that it would be very difficult to make a unit made out of non-Newtonian material only that would withstand penetration resistance.
Okay.
So we're going to have some form of hard shell. And also, non-Newtonian materials are typically very heavy, and they can be quite hard. And very difficult to manufacture as well. So in the end, it would be a great helmet just made out of non-Newtonian material, but it wouldn't be penetration resistant, and it would be too heavy for you to wear it. And so that's a key consideration. It's like, we could go and do this, and, you know, any manufacturer would come out and make the safest helmet in the world, but it would just be the thickest. Okay. Because, you know, it's this crush distance equals safety, pretty much.
Okay.
But all what you can do is make your liner, which is the crushable part in the helmet, the most efficient at the right sort of impact energies. And so we started off with that, and then we actually went to the manufacturer after a couple of years. We had a great design, and they go, sorry, we can't build this.
Huh.
And we go, what do you mean? You're a helmet manufacturer. What do you mean? And they just turn around and go, well, we build these things, and then the manufacturer we use builds a lot of your favorite brands' helmets. In fact, the one that you have probably came from the same factory that we use. And which is great, because what that means is they've built every helmet in the last 20 years. They know the safety procedures. They know the engineering. They know the materials. They can test it all in-house. They know what they're doing. But they go to our design. They go, you are changing our processes too much. We will not help you.
Oh.
I said, okay, Cool. So then there should be, so there's sort of two things there. It's like, do we go with another manufacturer who doesn't know how to build helmets, but can do the plastics and the foams that we're looking at doing? Or do we use a helmet manufacturer? And in the end, we chose the helmet manufacturer because it de-risks the entire situation. They know how important quality control is. They know
Totally.
how to test materials. They have materials on hand. They have the engineers. They have the expertise to work alongside us to get it done. And so what that ended up being was another huge step in our design process of going, okay, they can't build this. What can they build? And how can we get it to do the thing we need it to? And like you said, that sort of folding, fitting around perfect with that dynamic frame thing, we did have to come back to some of the materials and processes that use just so they could build it.
Okay.
But in the end, the current product is better than what the first one was anyway. So that's even better.
Yeah. Well, and that stands to reason. Once you get them built, it gets better with each iteration from prototype to the next prototype and so on up the line. And it is amazing how, I mean, I say it looks like it shouldn't work. Now, that's probably not the best thing to say. Like, I know what I mean, and I hope that translates well. But I'll tell you the story about when I saw it. For the first time, I think in an Instagram ad, maybe, is where I saw it. And I saw the word helmet, but I didn't see one in the picture. I was like, what was, am I looking at the wrong thing? Like, I don't know what I'm looking at. So I tapped it, went through, and I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. That's just cool. It also caught my eye. I think there was a bright green one or it was a bright yellow one. I don't know. It was one of the other bright colors caught my eye. Very cool. But once you get down to the fact that it looks like from a distance, you can't tell someone's wearing a helmet. Now, if, again, we'll get to the fashion part. I swear to you, we will. But that is also a big, that just shows what kind of design went into it. Thin, lightweight. And it is lighter weight, I assume, even though like you've worked that out as well.
It's
What's it like to
interesting.
wear one?
It's so the feedback we get and the feedback that we want is it doesn't feel like anything on the head.
Okay.
That is what we're after every time. Because the whole thing about people not wanting to wear helmets is a lot of the time, particularly with ear cups and stuff on regular helmets, it makes you feel
Sure.
as though you're in a cardboard box or a fishbowl.
Sure.
Whereas skiing and snowboarding is an incredibly free feeling. You're out there in that, you can hear everything, but helmets really restrict that. And so what we were trying to do was build something much more like a beanie where it doesn't block any of your senses, it doesn't feel like it's there, it doesn't move around. And so we run at about 500 grams, depending on the size. So it's actually
Okay.
on the weightier side of helmets.
Okay.
But yeah, I think there's some other units that are about 650 grams in the market. So
Sure.
they're a bit heavier, quite popular units.
Sure,
I
sure.
won't say them here. But what we do is, I don't know if you in helmets, there's adjusters at the back. You can adjust them, and the soft foam that sits
Sure.
within inside helmets. Those things make a helmet feel like it fits,
Yes.
but it doesn't actually mean that the helmet fits. And for a rigid base helmet, it cannot fit everywhere. Everybody has a unique head shape. Everybody, doesn't matter where you're from, it's different. So
Oh, yeah.
unless the helmet manufacturer that you use somehow magically uses a head shape that's close enough to your head and their CAD model, it probably doesn't fit. So what we do is we add all these adjusters and stuff in to make it feel as though it does. But what
Cool.
that does is from a center of gravity perspective, it pulls the mass of the helmet away from the center of gravity of your head or the center of mass of your head, if you're an
Okay.
engineer. So what that does is like it induces swing weight because pretty much anything is force times distance. So the more force you have, the further away, the distance away is a multiplier of that force. So you'll know if you've ever put on a helmet that doesn't fit or anything and you spin your head around, it'll feel like it's moving around a lot and it'll feel quite
Yeah.
heavy.
Yeah.
Whereas if you put ours on, ours designed like a race car seat, there's no soft foam, there's no adjusters. But if you get into a race car seat that's molded to you, it will feel hard initially. But because it's perfectly molded to you, that is the most comfortable thing you'll be in. And that's kind of the analogy we use with our fit. And because of that, so going back to the weight thing, it doesn't feel heavy. We had a kid test a prototype that was about 900 grams. He was a non-helmet wearer over in New Zealand. And he was just learning 900s or 1080, sorry, 1080s
Sure.
on, in the park at Cadrona. Sorry, Remarkables. And he rode it and he goes, oh, I didn't even notice it. And so this
Wow.
helmet is heavier than most motorcycle helmets. And it's sitting on top
Yeah.
of your head, and you go from beanies to helmets, and you go, oh, I don't really notice it. He goes, I don't wear helmets because they annoy me when I spin, but this one is
Sure.
okay. And that was just a
Wow.
pretty dirty prototype. And so that was excellent feedback in the fact that we needed to chase this center of gravity thing. And it became really important. And that's one of the experiential things in our helmet that makes it really good on the hill.
That's very interesting that there is a science behind why your helmet feels the way it does. Because even mine, like I said, you know, I'm on the larger side. I have a fairly large hat size. And, you know, even though I have mine all set now and adjusted and buckled and clipped after, you know, it took a little bit, but I got it. Just like adjusting the rearview mirror in the car, you know, you get it. And to think that there is a science behind, even now, like when I'm moving my head, it doesn't always feel, you could tell something's there. You could tell the extra weight is there. That's amazing that there's a science to that. I had no idea. I just thought that's what we did. So that makes it interesting, because if you figured this out now, not taking away from what you figured out, it's interesting to think why it wasn't figured out 15 years ago. That's very interesting.
I have an answer for that one too.
Oh, even better. Let's go, man.
It's one of those ones, I don't feel bad saying it, but it's one of those ones that it's interesting. And the reason why, and a great part of every sort of entrepreneurial journey or when you're building a product or something, one of the great questions is, that is such a cool idea. Why has nobody else done it?
Totally.
And we got that all the time from investors, all that kind of thing. It's a very, very fair question. And we went on that journey ourselves. We went, why does this not happen? Because we could see, we designed it, went, every other manufacturer probably has, you know, easily 100 times our resources. I was a 20-year-old engineering student at the time. I had no cash, no experience, nothing. You know, like I'm not even a great snowboarder much of the time. So it's like, why have these other companies who are much more able to do it not? And the answer that we've ended up at, that we've sort of validated throughout the industry now that we're in it, is that there's not great margin in helmets. So by the time you build one and you sort of sell it to a wholesaler, sell it to a retailer, retailer takes their cut and sells it, you might make $10, maybe $20 on a unit that's, you know, $300 deep. So it's an expensive unit that you're not making much out of. Sure. And that's why a lot of our, so like the biggest sort of helmet manufacturers in our ski industry are goggle manufacturers.
Okay.
You know, yeah, optics are in their website domain. You have to click through three different roles on the website to get to helmets, even though they are the biggest helmet manufacturer in the industry.
Interesting.
And it's because, you know, as far as we're aware, there's much more margin in goggles and glasses.
I would assume, yes.
Goggles, you can, yeah, you know, I don't know the cost of goods. I probably shouldn't reveal that kind of thing, but you can go on Alibaba and find some reasonable goggles for $10.
Sure.
And they're selling them for, yeah, you can buy goggles for $400. So
you totally can.
But if you're doing a helmet like ours is at $229. US.
Yep.
But our helmet costs about 5 times more than a traditional helmet to build.
Sure. But you're getting something for that money, which we'll get into in a bit of here too.
Exactly. And so that's why we've got this really interesting model, and we had to build something that fit everybody perfectly, is because you need to be able to order it online.
Sure.
We're going to have retailers, and we love retailers. We're going to use heaps of them. But our first couple of years, we couldn't have gotten this started without being able to sell online. And if you can't guarantee fit, you can't do that.
Sure. Absolutely. And it's, you've done like even 229, like I've seen traditional helmets go for almost that, like, you know, and it's kind of funny. You bring up that manufacturer where you got to click through the website to get past the optics to the helmet. Pretty sure that's where my helmet come from. But my goggles,
I think it is.
I'm fairly it certain is. It is. And, yeah. But my goggles didn't come from there, man. I went cheap, but I went good and cheap. It was awesome. So we'll get like, man, this is just interesting. Like the technical aspect, I almost don't care about the skiing and snowboarding part anymore. Just the technical part is great. And let's talk before we go further about the technical, some of the other stuff that I don't understand here. One of the features, EN1077 and ASTM F2040 approved. What does that mean?
Correct. So in snow sports, we pretty much have two main certifications. So they're the minimum standards. You can sell helmets without being certified, but there was one company that did it a few years ago. I don't think they do it anymore. But pretty much it just means you meet the minimum standards for impact resistance in helmets. The EN1077 is the European, ASTM is the American. So it's pretty much your equivalent of your CPSC bike helmet standard.
Okay, sure. Interesting. Let's see. You patented dynamic frame, patented dual stage liner. What do we got there? We're going through features.
So the frame itself, it's sort of, so our entire unit, a lot of helmets are one, maybe two parts plus straps. We're about 80.
Wow.
So it's that's why it's hugely expensive to build, and it was so hard to develop, is because we have all these things that work against each other that we have to make work together to do this thing where it fits and feels and all that kind of thing.
Sure.
So the dynamic frame, what it does is it ensures that the helmet stretches to go over your head perfectly. So what it is that the helmet has all this dynamic movement in it. And so, you know, me and three of my mates, one time we all measured our heads, we were 56 centimeters. We all wore a different helmet that fit best. So it's not necessarily about the size, it's about the shape that's important of your head. And everybody has a different one. So we had to build this frame that was able to move around and go onto everybody's head perfectly. And that's what the dynamic frame is. So it's elasticized, it's got carbon strips, got all this kind of stuff that effectively allows the whole thing to articulate perfectly around your head. And so it just fits, it goes on, just fits.
Interesting.
And the dual stage liner is part of what is it working together with the frame is what makes it really safe. So we don't use one material, we use two materials. So in impact land, pretty much, you know, you can tune a material in terms of density, hardness, that kind of thing, to be really good at a certain impact level. And it'll be, you know, it's a bell curve. It'll be good at a bunch of things, but it's maximum good at about one point. But if you have a number of materials at a number of different densities, what that allows you to do is protect against a broader range of impacts. Because as we know now, we've got CTE now, we've got TBIs. We're not just worried about your huge concussions, but we're also worried about the smaller subconcussive stuff too. And so what we do is, and in that dual stage liner, to add another layer of complexity on top, is where we use our non-Newtonian materials. So they start off soft and turn hard. So when you apply a bit of force to those non-Newtonian materials, they harden a little bit that protect you from your smaller impacts. But then when you have a big crash, they harden and they work like the rest of the helmet. So in your larger level impacts, it protects as well. So that dual stage liner allows us to be safer across a broader range of impacts.
Interesting. And then, man, that's, there is so much that goes into something that's relatively small. That's amazing. The technology, the mathematics, the science, everything. Speaking of mathematics, 32.4% safer than international standards. What does that mean, and how'd you get that number?
Yeah, so that's one of the things we're really proud of. In fact, the numbers actually go bigger than 32.4%. As you can see on the website, we release all of our drop test data. But 32.4% we found is the number that people believe us at. If we start saying too much more than that, people go, no, you're lying. So okay, pretty much the bench, like I was saying before, the industry standards are our benchmark. Pretty much.
Yeah.
And so what we do is when we do certification testing, we ship all the helmets out to a third-party independent tester. We don't know these guys. They're a global accredited lab, and they test the materials, the entire helmets in, you know, the certification standard, and they send us back the results. And then from there, we apply for our certification sticker. We're then certified. Happy days. And every helmet has to do that. So every helmet manufacturer, every helmet model knows this data. They know how much beyond this standard that they pass, how much safer they are than the minimum standard.
Okay.
And so our claim there and on our website, what we show is how much beyond the minimum standard we are. We've never found drop test results from any helmet to be better than ours, benchmarked across the certification standard.
Excellent.
So we can't say, we don't say we're the safest helmet in the world. We say we set out to build the safest helmet in the world, and our drop test results are the best anyone's ever seen.
Perfect.
And that's why we release them. And part of the reason why we release them is we think everyone should be safer. Because like we were talking about cost before, a more expensive helmet doesn't necessarily equate to a safer helmet, as much of us would assume.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of studies that have been done. And so every helmet manufacturer, every helmet model in the world knows this data for their helmets. They just don't release it for some reason.
Sure.
And I can hypothesize as to what that reason is, but I'd probably get myself in a little bit of trouble.
I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't want to release it, especially if you're on the plus side. Like, A, everybody loves transparency, especially in business. The more honest you are, you know, the more truths you tell, people trust you. It's a wonderful, beautiful thing. And it's now bragging rights, like, which is great for advertising and everything else and other marketing. Like, you could say, hey, 32.4 above the line, and nobody can beat us at that. Now, you're not being a jerk about it, obviously, but if it's true, it's true. And it is amazing. Now, these tests are, you know, I think we've all seen drop tests, impact tests, you know, other industries use those in their advertising as well. Cars obviously use like crash tests, very similar. Other brands and other industries use these. Did you have to, now you have, I understand the need for a third-party testing facility. Did you, I assume you did all the same tests too, just throwing them off of buildings or what? I mean, I'm sure it's more technical than that, but you know, the point is, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, well, the funny enough, like through prototyping, like we were just young kids playing about for a little while there until we got really serious and got some investors and really started doing it. So before the big serious drop test results, I had a business partner at the time in the early days, and he would just hit me over the head with a piece of wood, and we'd just go until I couldn't take it anymore. It's just sort of, and it was funny in a pitch competition early days, because like I said, we did the startup thing, which is all the pitch comps and all that kind of nonsense.
Sure.
And we had someone who was the chief entrepreneur of my state, which was a government appointed thing. We were at a competition and we did really well. We won some stuff, but his feedback was, I don't believe you. Nobody's going to believe you. You have to be able to show me. And so in our pitches, we started going, right, well, let's just introduce violence. And there's nothing that shows that a helmet's going to work until someone's just going to get smacked over the head. Like, I believe in this thing. I know it works. I did the engineering. So what we ended up doing in these pitch competitions, you know, to sometimes like hundreds and thousands of people in these big rooms, was my business partner. We'd have about the width of an iPhone. It was our measuring guide for cutting the wood. And it's 12 millimeter plywood. So it was serious. Sure. And he'd just jump on stage when we'd go and we stand by the product, and he'd come back and he'd lump me with it. The piece of wood would break and everyone would go nuts, and it was a great fun thing. So that was the original. Mm-hmm. And then we got, you know, more and more sort of involved in the testing, and the machines got more expensive and the access got better. And so now we don't do that so much anymore. It was fun then. But we're a little bit more grown up now. There's still some great videos of that online and some great ads that went that way. But even like recently this season, we had a lot of people going, oh, how does it go for penetration resistance? Someone should just hit someone with a hammer. And we go, great, we can do that. And so there's a couple of videos of me this season with someone just walking up to me and just hitting me with a hammer over the head. And it just works.
See, I was going to joke about it, but then ask, have you done not necessarily a live trial like that, which clearly you have, so awesome. But has it been put to the test in the field, as in one of your testers or someone who's purchased one, just a regular consumer? Have you gotten that feedback that someone took the hit, put it to use as intended, and how they came out of it outside of the laboratory?
Yeah. Well, actually, we you know, people go, oh, well, what in your videos, why do none of your athletes crash? Like, we're not sending our athletes out there to fall. Like, that's against the point. That's so dumb. Like, I'll take a hit, but it's my company. I believe in it. Like, we're not going to get an athlete to go and shorten their career just by taking a hit. Even though it does work, that's against the point. But we've had three people this season email back going, hey, you guys saved us this season. And so there's one guy who we're dealing with at the moment. I'm waiting to get the helmet back from him. But he sent an image of him after the crash, and he has grazes and bruises sort of all over the front quarter of his head, like sort of above his eye all the way back around to his ear. And it's cracked the foam. It's broken the helmet. But that means the helmet's done exactly what it was meant to do. And so his message is like, hey, guys, can I have another one? So we sorted him one out. And but he goes, yeah, you guys really, really saved me today. Because like the force, that how bruised he was, even though he was still wearing a helmet, that impact would have been a huge issue had he not been wearing a helmet or been wearing a subpar helmet. So we're pretty proud of that. It's the coolest part of what we do, is that feedback and knowing we save lives.
And that's great. That's awesome. Not only knowing that it works. Another question about that: when you get that one back, is there more data you can get from that used helmet that you can even now improve, or is that a Star Trek thing?
No, it's all data. You know, everything, entrepreneurship, everything engineering is, every time you can see something broken, it's a number of things. And so like, and when I say broken, is the helmet has broken, but that's the point. Every piece of energy that the helmet takes from the impact and turns into its own breakage, its own destructive, is energy that's not getting to your brain, which is excellent. And so we'll learn a little bit from I've seen the photos, they're pretty comprehensive, but it'll be just great to have a bit of a poke around and have a look and see what it did, because, you know, we don't have a huge range of sort of a cache of old impacts that we can look at. So it's good to keep building our sort of data and research to see what happens there.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. This thing is so safe. It is so just, there's so much technology in it. And again, similar with some of the adaptive sports technologies, that you almost went into, you know, we look at these things and like, well, how much technology is there really in it? Once you get down to someone who makes it, who gets into the mathematics, the science, the engineering, gets it all, there's a ton of tech into it. But this thing isn't all only technologically cool. It looks good. As I said, I saw someone with goggles and a bright colored beanie with the word helmet in the ad. It was like, I don't see a helmet. That's part of the point. In fact, shout out to one of my Lifty coworkers. I was a Lift operator at Whaleback Mountain during the season. My time there is done this season because they're closed. But one of my Lifty coworkers, shout out Allie, if you've made it to this episode, she just started listening. But I told her about this as we were talking, getting this set up. And she looked at, she's like, that is wicked cool, man. She's like, I like it, you know. I can't imagine that going any other way. So, God, this part's kind of, see, the technical part's easy for a podcast with no videos and no pictures. It's the explanation. So to play along, not if you're driving, if you're listening in the car, don't touch your phone, just let it go. Get it when you get to work or home, wherever you're going. Go to antiordinary.co.co. You'll see all the pictures, plus Instagram. And are you on the other two big ones as well?
We're on Facebook and Instagram. All the same handle, antiordinary.co everywhere.
Cool. So you go there, excuse me, and see the photos. It looks like someone's just wearing a beanie. That is it. A regular old run-of-the-mill knit. You picked one up for $5 somewhere. Beanie. That's what it looks like. And the thing is, the look is even more, it's almost camouflage. It's almost, I don't even know. It's incognito because people have their, you know, goggle straps around the back, just like you would on your head, just like we did in the old days, holding your hat down. How did you get to the fashion design part? We understand the tech part now. So yeah, and you've got it. So it feels like you're just wearing a knit hat. Why do it?
It's just staying true to the original concept, really. Like, because the ad is zip on and off. You can run it naked if you like, and it just looks like a really sick helmet. Some people do prefer that. Staying true to the original design was, instead of making a helmet more comfortable, we'll make a beanie more safe. And that's what we did. Some people love it, some people hate it, but that's kind of the point. You know, we're anti-ordinary. We're not meant to conform to everyone else. And if everyone was pleased by it immediately, nobody would really care enough. Mm-hmm. And so we went down this beanie thing, and it also gives us a huge amount of personalization, customization. We can team up with, you know, different ski areas, different instructors, different, we can do uniform, we can do play with other brands. You know, some of your favorite ski brands who don't make helmets, we can help them out, put their logo on our units, and we can play together. So there's just all this opportunity that's just sort of been done. And we have a lot of people, even this season, you know, it's our first proper season. They're buying 3 or 4 outers with the helmet. So, because you can buy them, they zip on and off, you can replace them. So people are going, I'm running 3 different kits this season, or I just like different colors, or me and my friends like to swap. It just adds this customization that hasn't been available before. And it requires, you know, other helmet companies don't make very interesting colors, you know? Yeah. And for us, like, we don't gender our helmets, like male, female, because there's no difference between a male and a female helmet.
No.
You just might paint one pink. And yeah. So, yeah, the classic ski industry is shrink it and pink it. It's like, that's silly. It's like, they're just helmets. You just heads. So, like, the one that I wear is a pale pink. It's my favorite car. It's one that I run. But I wouldn't be able to buy a men's helmet in pale pink. So you can do whatever you like, and that's part of the fun.
Absolutely. And we know that is true anyway. I mean, go around your local area anywhere in the world. Everybody's stickered. Majority of people have their black helmet because that's what it is. It's black or gray, or, you know, somewhere in that, you know, color scheme. And then everybody just sticker, 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 sticker. Mine is too. Mine is too. It's Ski Rex Media stickers right up front, of course, but mine is too. And so does everybody else's. And it's a, you know, it's a canvas. And Lord knows, in a year or two, once you've really destroyed the rest of the market because you're going to have a better product, you're going to see on YouTube, you know, how to make your own cover. You're going to see the DIY, and you're going to have colors and patterns. And like you said, I didn't even think about branding. My goodness. You can, any, if you have a logo that can be embroidered, boom, you're in. Now, if you ran it blank without the knit cover, without the cover at all, would something like a sticker, like we all talk about, would that affect how well it works at all?
No, as long as you don't put it over the articulation pieces of the frame. Yeah, there's sort of like the ridges and the lines where things move and articulate. As long as you don't sort of sticker it up by like taping it closed, pretty much, you can do that all you like. It's yeah, and that'll be pretty obvious for people. But cool. Eventually they get patches are available. We just don't think of them right now, and that's a lot of the thing with this unit is that people go, "Oh, I can't put stickers on." It's like, yeah, but you can put iron-ons on, and we can make those more available than what they are. There's just no need for it right now. But now that we have a need, we can build them, like no stress, and so that's part of the fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting that someone actually gave you that feedback. Oh, man, I can't sticker it. It's like, dude, if you have a friend who knows how to use an embroidery machine, you could do a heck of a lot more than sticker it, dude. You can do things that – this is a family show, and I won't say them here, and I won't disrespect you by using those words. But kidding aside, you could, man. You got the look. You got the tech underneath it, and I think – well, like you were saying, and I kind of did ask the same question twice when I asked how we got to the look. But the point stands is like you made something that looks cool. People are going to use it and maybe forget how safe it is. You know, cars do that. Some of the things we think looks cool or feels good, that's all safety features, man. And you got that here. And have you gotten to use it in Utah? Have you been out? Have you? You're out. You're working, but have you snuck out a couple days? You know. Maybe.
Yeah, I have. Okay. I'm trying to make myself a bit of a local at Brighton, which is good. But I'm from the hot part of Australia, so like getting feet on board is actually a pretty important thing for me to keep progressing my riding. And I'm a wakeboarder, so I'm handy on rails, handy in jumps on a wakeboard. But I need to get to that stage on a snowboard. But over the past few years, like it's been a rough ride. You know, like we've been very broke for a long time. Like even sort of 6 months ago, I was still pouring concrete on a job site, trying to keep the lights on, kind of thing. Right and on. So over the last few years, it's actually probably kept me off the snow more than it's got. And the entire idea was like, I want to snowboard all my life. So how do I get close? I was like, oh, we'll build a snowboard helmet company. But for some reason, it's gone the opposite way and kept me off the mountain as much as it's tried to get me on. So this season, I'm trying to, now that it's gone well and we've done all these sales and that kind of thing, I'm trying to prioritize getting on the hill and just being in love with the thing and being in love with the people that do it. That's, you know, the chairlift rides are probably one of my favorite bits is just hang out with really, really interesting people.
Oh yeah, I love the chairlift ride. I will talk to people all day. I don't care who it is or what they want. If they don't want to talk, fine. I don't force myself on anybody. That'd be weird. But you know, it's interesting you brought it up. If you want to ski or snowboard more, I've always said working in the industry will bring that cost down. You'll get your pass, you'll get tickets, whatever, cheap rentals, but don't go beyond. Don't go beyond, I would say, assistant management at your local mountain. Because once you start to do like what Rob is doing, start a whole helmet company, you do what I'm doing in the media or anything, you just don't get to do it anymore. You're busy doing something at a desk or in a lab or somewhere else in an office somewhere, and you don't get out as much. I didn't start this to actually work, but I actually do. So that's whatever. Dude, it is fantastic. I love it that you are still just a regular dude trying to put something else out, working on the job site, talking about, I'm getting the work done, but I'm going to get to this. And that's awesome. It looks great. If you ever need an American test subject, I'll do it. I don't ski hard anymore, but Lord knows one of these days I'm going to need that helmet to do its job. Almost did the other day, actually, but I recovered and that was awesome. It looks fantastic, dude. This is so awesome, man. So let's go over where to find it again. Antiordinary.co.co. That's right. Because I'm looking at that. Antiordinary.co on Facebook and Instagram, correct?
We're just Antiordinary Plain on Facebook, just but Antiordinary.co on Instagram. But if you Google beanie helmets or Antiordinary or whatever it is, we come up. You know, there's nobody else really doing what we do. So you'll find us without too much trouble. That's the beauty of being so different is it's not hard to find us.
You know, it's very interesting to me also that you said you could rebrand. Like I see a future of you, you know, like ski resorts that do rent helmets now. You can do that. You can rent full kit and we'll, you know, be calling you up and be like, give us 200 of this with our, you know, name your local hill logo, man. So it's branded. The sky's the limit for you. So speaking of which, then are we stopping or are you stopping at snow sports helmets? Or are you thinking, all right, can you take the technology, say, to mountain biking? Because mountain biking, once you get to pro level and some of the more difficult consumer or recreational level, you got your full face mask now, and you have the helmet. You have, again, something like this could be, you know, a technology they'd want in other sports, even though some of those sports have it, like auto racing has their technologies that they use. American football has the technologies that they use, you know, and so baseball would crush with this thing, man. Like, what a great idea that, you know, because again, you get hit in the face with an 80 mile an hour pitch. Someone else do the metric math on that. It's I know what it is. It doesn't matter.
It hurts.
It hurts at any
rate.
That's
the only math you need. It hurts.
It will knock you cold. Like, absolutely, you will cry. Like, and there's no shame in crying for anybody. Do you see a time where you might branch off, or might you just say, hey, here's my technology. If you want it, go for it.
No, like we built it with other things in mind. So particularly, so like I'm a big bike rider, and sure. The way it sits right now is it would pass the cycle helmet standards, mm-hmm. and for commuter cycling it would be fantastic. Just where you're just hanging out, if you're in somewhere reasonably cold, or even it does actually work well. I've mountain biked in it all the time, even with the beanie outer, it heats and cools differently because of the way it's designed. So it does quite well in warm and cold, which is excellent. Mm. So we could go into cycle tomorrow if we wanted to. However. Staying true to what we do is the most important thing for now. Like we built this, and the reason, part of the thing is that nearly all ski helmets are just the same tech as bike helmets with some fur on it and some ear pads.
Totally. Yeah.
And we're the antithesis of that. And that's why, like, everyone, a lot of, you know, potential investors, advisors, that kind of, they go, oh, go to bike. Bike is a bigger market. Yeah, absolutely it is. But one, ski is what we love. The snow is where we want to be. We love people who are on the chairlift. We want to protect them. And two, nobody has gone from the ground up going, if I'm to build a snow helmet, what would it be? And that's what we've done. So we didn't want to water the brand down or water the product down by going, oh, it's a ski helmet and a bike helmet, or it's a helmet that will go into ski. So no, okay. we are snow people. This is where we start. But excellent. Of course, the global thing is we just really like protecting brains. So we want to be the best brain protection company in the world. And we want to, you know, action sports in particular, because that's what I love. I would love to make dirt bike helmets so I can make dirt bike. I can buy dirt bikes and write them off on tax when I have the money to do so. That would love be it. Wonderful.
Love
but
it.
But for now, like, we just want to do ski, and we just want to be the best helmet in ski, which we believe we already are. But we want to be the best brain protection company in ski first, and then we'll move to everything else. We don't want to, you know, I'm 27. I've got years. I can run this company for like 50 years. I don't absolutely. Need to rush into cycle tomorrow. Our investors are fantastic. They're okay with us doing the right thing at the right time, not going, let's pump up the revenue. Let's pump up the revenue. Let's go across all these markets and then sell it. It's mm-hmm. No, let's build the best company, because that's where the real value is in saving lives and doing a good job. And that's the ultimate goal.
Absolutely. And I think that's brilliant to stick with one thing, just stick in your lane and then do that the best that you can. That does become a problem. We know that, you know, sure, you have the technology, you have the, you know, the design, and you could probably, you yourself could probably sit down and be like, all right, what does a motocross helmet need? From my design, it goes to this. And what does a mountain bike need? And what does, you know, auto racing, pick your, whatever it is, F1, NASCAR, rally, whatever it is, you know, on and on and on and on and on. But you got, once you start doing that, you then might lose focus on this one or lose focus on that one. Stay in your lane. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's also good advice when you're driving. Stay out of my lane.
The drivers out here probably need that too, out here in Utah. So pretty unreal.
You know, I've said to people, I've lived in the East most of my life, in New England and in, you know, in Jersey, whatnot. And I always tell them, once you start getting up toward the Pacific Northwest, I've never seen traffic like that. Seattle is dumb. It's dumb. I love your city. I hate your driving in it. I'll walk everywhere in that city. And you need to make sure everybody else does too. Park City, I'm sure, is probably about the same. I don't know. I'm just picking on you. Awesome. So we know where to get it. Links in the description. Actually, you did touch on this for a second. It is warm then. When you put on, it looks like a knit hat, and it should function like one.
It is. And we do this thing where it's actually very different in terms of heating and cooling, because we don't we have vents, sort of ports, inlet and outlet in the frame. But because that's covered by the woolen outer, some people go, well, how does it breathe? And like, I'm a big guy. I run hot. I've got quite a lot of hair at the moment. I sweat pretty bad. Doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm into that. So when we built it, because it has contact points all the way around the head, it doesn't really breathe like a regular helmet does. A regular helmet needs to promote airflow because it's only touching at a few spots. So you get a few hot spots and then you get a few cool spots where the air hits you as it goes through. But we use a Merino inner. So, and Merino, of course, has that beautiful heats you when you're cold, cools you when you're hot, moisture wicking, sure. Keeps you to a natural temperature. And that's the reason why we use that Merino, because it is just has this beautiful temperature. And because of that, what it does is the Merino itself does all the heating and cooling work. And then the airflow from the ports, they do the rest of the job in terms of either cooling the Merino or not, if that makes sense. Sure. So I've ridden mountain bikes in this, it was like 23 degree heat in Australia, 23 Celsius. And it was like 95% humidity. In fact, started raining at one point, and it was a real slow going, tough uphill. Yeah. And I was fine. Of course, at some stage, you've got something on your head. It limits airflow. So if you're riding mountain bikes at 23 degrees and you're going slowly and you're exerting force a lot, even wearing a hat is going to be hot at that point. So, however, you know, but I was in a blizzard last week in Bend at Mount Bachelor. And that was cold and windy, and my head was totally fine.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is fantastic when you can do that. God, you've got everything covered. For those keeping score, 23C is about 75 degrees, just so you know.
Great conversion. I'm still not across it yet. I still can't do it. But
I can't. I just looked it up. I remember it some days, and other days I don't even know who owns Ski Rex Media. And it's so that's awful. Man, you got everything covered. Oh, one more thing about the fit. Are we talking down to littles, or are we just talking adults?
So kids hit head size maturity in terms of entering adult sizes pretty early. So sort of like 8 or 9, most kids will slip into a small. And then from there, they're in adult sizes. So we only have small, medium, large. It goes up to about 63 centimeters head size. So we will expand that range at some stage. But for now, the tooling costs is like building the helmets, very expensive. The tools are very complex to build. So we're not quite ready to do that just yet. But we will. That's the plan. And so it's one of those ones where, it should just fit. It goes on for 80% of the population or 90% of the population. It'll go on and just fit perfectly.
Perfect. That's exactly what we want. Awesome, man. You've got just about every base covered on a new product that is the future. It's science fiction, dude. It is Star Trek level technology. It is amazing. You will see these on somebody's going to get their space program to get you to build a helmet, and they're going to have their logo, whoever, SpaceX, maybe Elon, what are we doing here? Like, come check this out, man. Awesome, dude. Thank you very much for coming on the program. I'm sold. I love it. I think it's great. I want one. And I want my own branded cover and everything because, I'm wearing a Ski Rex Media hat right now that still has the sticker on it, I just realized, but that's okay. Dude, thanks for coming on. This was a lot of fun. Antiordinary.co, like we said, dude, anything else you want to get into before I let you go?
No, that's fantastic. Thank you very much for having me. If anyone wants to get on board, let me know. We're pretty much all sold out for the season, but I'm always looking for new friends out here. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Sold out already. Well, I know it's the end of the season, but it's a new product, so already still is valid. Awesome. Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Rob. We're going to let Mr. Rob go, and I'll be right back in a minute to close out the show. Sir, thank you very much again.
Thanks, Mike. Cheers.
And there he goes. Rob Joseph, founder of Antiordinary and one of the designers, as we learned. Smart guy, educated guy, knows what he's doing, and he's going to protect everybody's noggin in a new way. And we're going to look good doing it. It's a lot of fun. I'm going to get one as soon as I can. As he said, supplies might be limited now at their end of the season. But hey, if they bring those supplies back up, I think I want to try one. And the funny thing is, and we talked about this a little, is that you want to see if it works, but you don't want to see if it works. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we made jokes and he said he tested it with a couple of clocks upside the dome, and that's great. I don't really want to test it out and out. Like he said, he's not going to put anybody who's riding for them and testing for them purposefully headfirst into trees and rocks. That would just be silly. But it's nice to know that it's there and can take the beating that we want. So check them out, antiordinary.co out of Australia. Shout out to them. Shout out to Maria Baker. These are our two friends from Australia, Maria Baker at Nobody's Princess, and now Rob Joseph at Antiordinary. Check them out, won't you? Obviously, Antiordinary, the link is in the description. Go ahead and check them out. Then you can also follow them on social media. I do. It's very cool. I hope you maybe want to try one out. And if not, that's cool too. At least the information's out there to help you decide. I want to try one out, and we'll see if I can get that done. How awesome would it be to have one of their covers with the Skyrex Media logo on it? Talk about an awesome addition to the merch shop, right? Right. I don't know. Anyway, thank you for joining me on the old Skyrex Media podcast. I hope you are having a good endo season, or beginning of spring season is actually more accurate, because it's not the end of the season everywhere. It's snowing in other parts of the country. New England's getting a little bit here and there in March, but New England's pretty much done. So we're looking ahead to see what we're going to do outside for the spring and the summer and the fall. It is waterfall season. I love me a good waterfall. So expect there to be a Skyrex Media waterfall division on social media, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and X. The big three with the, you know, LinkedIn's more for business. So if you have a business inquiry, go ahead there, or just send me an email, contact@skyrexmedia.com. Or again, if you want to interact with the show, please go to speakpipe.com/SkyrexMedia or the Skyrex Media website, skyrexmedia.com, and leave me a voicemail. It's a lot of fun, and that would be awesome. Soon, we're going to do our end of the season panel as well for the Skyrex Media podcast, and then we'll get through the summer, and then we'll be back in the fall. But for now, we still have a few more episodes in us, a few hour episodes with... I have a few more interviews I'm trying to line up. I also have some more solo stuff coming. So stick with the Skyrex Media podcast. Check it out on your favorite podcast app, on Podbean, which is my actual specific host, or Patreon, patreon.com/SkyrexMedia. Dollar tier, $1 a month gets you the show for... yeah, I just biffed. $1 a month gets you the ad-free version of the Skyrex Media podcast, and it gets it to you early. There you go. So check that out if you would, and I will see you on the next one, and I will see you out there, and have a good spring, my friends. Later.